Good morning, everybody. This is Mo from Enough Cares, and today we have a wonderful guest with us, and we'll be discussing everything women's health, her mission work at Center for Black Women Wellness, and Jemia Dosir. She's the CEO there, and she's been there for almost 17 years. So it's either she really likes it. Yeah, 17 years. And probably time flies by. So we're excited to have her on and share about her work and what drives her. So Jemia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mo. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I love what you're doing, and I just look forward to the conversation. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. What made you to get started? What made you start this this walk? What led you here?
Yeah, I mean, that's so okay. So I was many years ago. I had recently moved from New York to Atlanta. Just young and full of energy and wanting a change and feeling like Atlanta was a great city to come to, because I already had some good friends here. And I had just received my master's in urban policy. So I was very interested in policy and macro issues, with an array of issues ranging from education to immigration to just it ran the gamut. And long story short, as I was doing work, I started working here in Atlanta, started doing some consulting, because my background was in educational consulting. And then as I started looking for nonprofit organizations to be involved with, because as much as I enjoyed thinking about things on a very big systems level, I was extremely interested in work on a micro level. Like, how do programs work? How do communities embrace programs? How do organizations work within communities to co-create programs that offer solutions to those most impacted by the problem? So as I began thinking about nonprofit work and connected with nonprofits, literally someone who interviewed me said, you know, they were not going to hire me, but they were familiar with the organization. They wanted to connect me to that organization. And that organization was the Center for Black Women's Wellness. And I always remember walking into the doors of the center. Community center. At the time, it looked kind of, very gray and kind of dreary. And I walk in and I see these pink walls, not necessarily my color palette preference, but it was like, you know, this thing, these, you know, worn pink and gray, you know, used couches. But yeah, when I walked in, I immediately felt at home. I immediately felt that I was in a safe space for Black women. And the rest is history. I met our former executive director, Cheryl Boykins. We talked. It was not even an interview. It was a conversation. And I fell in love. I fell in love with the mission of the organization. I was totally caught up in her community organizing spirit and her love for community and the work that they were doing. And at the time, the work was really focused a lot on teen pregnancy prevention. This was in the 90s. And that was a big topic and a big pressing issue at the time. But what I really marveled at is as I began working there, and I was working there running our teen pregnancy prevention program, running it with her, and to see these community meetings where you had adults coming into the space, women and men, moms and dads, and breaking all kinds of stereotypes that adults didn't care, low-income adults didn't care about seeing pregnant girls, you know, walking around the community. I mean, it just broke all of the traditional stereotypes that were going on at the time that, community, you just think about. It was just, and so I loved it. I loved seeing adults coming together. And that was the intent of this project at the time, focused on how to reduce risky behaviors, focusing on how to be educated to have those kinds of difficult conversations with young people. And so again, I was hooked from that moment on. So I began working there doing program work, and I really did. Again, I got a good understanding of what it's like to partner with community to co-create, and you know, learn that work happens. It's a slower pace. It's more methodical, but it's intentional, and that sometimes things take time because you have to build trust, you have to build connection, and then that's how you build power. So those were kind of some of my early learnings. And I never in a million years would have thought I would be anywhere for so long. But truly, as you were saying earlier before the intro, I think when you do, anyone who does nonprofit work, especially community-based nonprofit work, I mean, you have to be really tied personally to the mission of the organization. And for someone like me who loves change, you have to understand that things change all the time. I mean, the work that we are doing now is totally different than what we were doing then. And every day is a new day because you're talking about working with people. And so there are all kinds of opportunities to learn and grow, and not just impart, but to also, you know, take in and just evolve, you know, be willing to evolve and be willing to learn and grow. So that's why I got into the work. You know, a few years after that, one of the our partners, interestingly enough, the woman who introduced me to the Center for Black and Muslim Women's Work, she was on the advisory board, and she was the one who connected us to the maternal and child health work. There was a proposal that had come out, federal grant called Healthy Starts, and that was really focused on infant mortality reduction. And we were fairly new in that space. I mean, we really had made our mark in pregnancy prevention. But there was at the time a strategy around reducing teen pregnancy in order to reduce infant mortality. And so because we felt very comfortable with teen pregnancy space at the time, and that's what made us say, okay, yeah, we'll apply. Mm-hmm. And 20 years later, you know, we're still doing the work of maternal child health, not at all really focused on teen pregnancy prevention, but very much focused on perinatal home visitation. Mm-hmm. and using social workers and paraprofessionals to build connection with pregnant women, to do home visits and connect those moms and their families to needed resources and support.
That's incredible. So you mentioned a couple of things there that I would love to unpack. One is what the shift between teen pregnancy to then maternal health, child and infancy. What made that switch? One, the recommendation of the grant. What has been the shift in the learning during that time period? Right now, we've shifted from teen pregnancy focus to perinatal care.
Yeah,
on perinatal care. Are there things that the mom in this new space that you all exist in that they've been seeking care? Is there a level of culturally relevant care that the moms are seeking? Is that why they come to the center? When the social service workers and support clinicians go to their home, what is it? What are the learnings?
Yeah, what do they say? Yeah, so the shift for us, the one thing I forgot to mention was, while we were really operating in the teen pregnancy space, and then over the years, teen pregnancy rates did go down, right? There was a lot of attention to the issue in the 90s. And maternal and infant health wasn't that big of a topic at the time. But interestingly enough, we had a small contract with the state of Georgia to do focus groups and to do a small research project around women who had experienced infant loss. Mm-hmm. I don't really recall the time why they chose us to do this work. It was a very small and a short grant. And so we engaged someone to actually go and really seek women who had experienced infant loss. And one of the things that we learned early on was that it was very quiet, hush. A lot of women talked about the fact that they experienced infant loss. And so we eventually did find women who experienced infant loss, and as they were as we were doing focus groups. And I was not involved in that work at the time. But I remember our former executive director was just so like, wow, this is a real issue. And women are suffering alone in silence. They've experienced a loss. So I think then that's really kind of what also got a little interest in this is an issue. And the Black community, we're not talking about it. And so then when we began doing the work, we didn't know a whole lot about really how to run a maternal child health program. So there were a lot of mistakes along the way. And so as we began trying to create this kind of case management program, which was going to be grounded in women doing home visitation, we had to find staff that really knew that space and worked in that space, because that was very new for the organization. And one of the things that we've learned over the years is that even in urban areas, I mean, there's this assumption that there's a strong social connection, that there are plenty of wonderful medical resources in a city like Atlanta. So Atlanta and other urban areas can be resource rich, but yet there is a lot of social isolation, and there are a lot of women who don't feel connected, or they feel like they're not supported, whether it is in community, whether it is by the healthcare, by healthcare systems. And so some of the things that we've learned over the time is that in doing this kind of work around supporting moms, A, we needed to have the right staff in place who really could do this kind of work, care coordination. And that needs to be like a mix of folks. I mean, so it could be women with lived experience who had very similar experiences to, you know, raising children and things like that. And, you know, we provide great training, you know, or equips them to be home visitors. It could be, again, on that team, bachelor's level, you know, social workers. It could be also, you know, a nurse case manager. So we also recently contracted out with a mental health person as part of like an interdisciplinary team. So that's one of the things, is that, you know, you need to have a good mix of folks who are really committed and passionate about supporting women. And then the woman who really benefits from home visitation is the woman who really, I feel, they are looking for a connection. They need support in finding prenatal care, in finding maybe pediatric care for their child, different health and social services. Maybe they need support with finding affordable housing, you know, job training, completing their degree. So and it's not just the usual suspects. I mean, we've learned through the pandemic that when you just don't know, you don't know, right? And a lot of us were scrambling trying to figure it all out, right? You know, if you unfortunately suffered job loss, you would be a bit amazed at, you know, folks, regardless of their education and income, that, you know, there's like, okay, I don't know. I don't know what to do. And, you know, so there's going to be a point in time when we're all looking for support. And pregnancy is that time in which often, you know, women feel more vulnerable, not saying that in a negative way. And so support is appreciated. So that's, I think, the ideal person who really benefits from a home visiting program and support. And, but also knowing that beyond that, in general, women and birthing people, they need whatever that support looks like, whether it's home visiting, whether it is, you know, empowered caregivers and family members who really can help support them, or whether it is definitely a more informed healthcare system that is committed to providing safer, more respectful care. All of those things are needed for us to have better birth outcomes.
Totally agree. And this is such an important work that you're doing. It truly is, because we know this, as you're familiar, this is a staggering. Read recently that 5 million women have died from pregnancy-related complications in the last 10 years. That's half a million every single year, right? Globally. Now, that's 800 in the States. So these are staggering statistics. And as you're loaded, it doesn't really matter if your economic status. Because we saw, unfortunately, the case of Serena Williams almost got into that complication. So that somebody with a lot of money, resources, was ill. The health system almost failed her, right? And the important work of ensuring that the mom feels safe is so necessary. Now, when we come to the hospital system, though, what's being done there? I know this is a bit of a different case, but the hospital system, but the moms that thankfully you guys are doing an incredible job on at home visit, when they are now in the delivery room, what's being done to ensure that those mothers feel as though they're safe, they're heard, the pregnancy is going to be a success, as opposed to feeling tense, apprehensive, and not trusting the system that they may fall into the statistics that we all are familiar with.
Right. I think that one of the most powerful things about home visiting or any kind of childbirth support, as includes doulas. I mean, there's when I think about just kind of like the child support kind of workforce and what that can look like, whether you're a community health worker or a doula or a family support specialist. I mean, there are, I feel like there are what you're doing with your modeling, how to advocate for yourself, and your teachings, and empowering women and birthing people to really be able to communicate about it, and to if they have concerns, if they have questions, and some of our family support specialists, they will actually go do kind of like modeling, like, okay, before you go to your next doctor's appointment, let's talk about some questions that you have, and you share with me those questions, and let's talk about it, and let's role play. So, like, they will do that so that they're that woman is really empowered to communicate on their behalf. So that's one thing that's very important. So I think there's work that we all can do to promote self advocacy, but then to your point in terms of the system, right? Because most women do deliver within a healthcare system, a hospital setting. And so while we are micro in terms of we're a direct service organization, partnerships are very important to us. And so we have always embraced in having hospitals at the table and all sorts of partners so that we could work collectively to create systems change. So we do work monthly. We have what we call a community action network. So we have folks at the table, such as Grady Hospital. We have some of the federal qualified health centers. We are very intentional about working together to address some of these issues, to bring to light some of the issues that our participants have faced, so that we can, problem solve and make them aware of what's going on. We want to be able to, again, work together to figure out how can we remove these silos, right? So that hospitals have a better understanding of community-based organizations and what we role we could play when women leave the hospital, and that they can this is a great partnership opportunity, because by women working with us and being in the program, we're encouraging them to seek their routine prenatal care. We're linking them to needed resources, and again, we're communicating with their providers. We all want to win here. We all want healthy pregnancies and healthy babies. So it is important. Of course, there's all other kind of work that's going on that other organizations are doing around implicit bias training and all kinds of other opportunities to train providers to be more deliberate in how they treat and respect women. Because to your whole point, Mo, regardless, I mean, education and insurance status and all of that those are not protective factors for Black women. Our maternal and infant mortality rates are still higher, especially when it comes to maternal mortality, regardless of education or income. So that we know that there's so much talk about social determinants of health, but racism is one of those social determinants of health. That and we just have to call it out, and we have to be very clear that that it's an issue, even if whether it's intended or not.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think the collaborative work. So it's so necessary, because I think we also had mentioned that the organization support moms with recently with psychologists.
Right. Yeah.
Which is very critical, that postpartum period. So it's not just the prenatal program, the postpartum period of I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I have this baby, my body's changed. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe I've gained an extra pound. How do I communicate all this? Things I don't feel confident about myself anymore. I need resources and I'm overwhelmed. That postpartum depression is super real.
Absolutely.
So it's so important that of the work that you're doing there and providing psychologists to ensure that those moms feel heard, they're safe, and then they can talk through their emotions and they can get the right type of care and support.
Yes.
I know so much focus is always on the pre-pregnancy, and we forget about the mom postpartum, because a lot of the deaths that happen as well is after the hospital visit, right?
When
moms are at home now. It's like, how do we ensure that we have those resources, again, increasing that access to care? I know this is early on. Are there learnings in how the mom seeking postpartum care in terms of like a psychologist that you all are providing access to now?
Yeah. We have found that over time, there is less stigma. In the beginning, many years ago, we were doing depression screening as part of kind of the risk assessment that women would have as they're entering to the program. And so even if they scored high on the screening and we would ask them about, do they want to be referred for a provider? Oftentimes, they would not receive the referral. So there were two things. One is that there was stigma at the time around seeking mental health support. The other piece was that just when you have so many competing priorities, number one, having a newborn, it's hard to kind of get all of that going on. And that's very understandable. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing was that we were asking women to refer out somewhere. So again, that's another barrier to having to go somewhere else. So over time, and again, that's why partnerships were key. So we have, for the past few years, we have a contractual therapist that would come on site to the center around once a week, so that we were trying to make increase access to providing mental health services. And then again, just over time, especially with the pandemic, there has just been much more awareness and understanding and embracing of a need for a mental health services, right? Because, you know, just thinking about all the increased anxiety and depression and trauma that collectively we've experienced because of the pandemic. And so there is much more of a willingness to seek support. And so we've even provided some other options. Just last year, for example, we had a group of our moms that come together monthly, and they're kind of our leadership group that inform the work that we do. And we had staff who had identified around three therapists who were interested in providing contractual services. And we allowed those therapists to talk to the group via Zoom using technology.
Yeah.
For the moms to ask their questions and, you know, get a sense of them. And then they told us which therapist they really connected with the most. And so we thought that was a great process, because then they were empowered to make a choice. And that was going to make them more willing to actually go and receive services from the therapist. So now, I mean, that is going off really well. And then because of the pandemic, the therapy is happening via telehealth. And so that also is reducing barriers. So while, you know, you do have some issues sometimes of things like, you know, in terms of, you know, internet and technology, for the most part, I mean, even if it's just being able to pick up a phone and have that conversation, being able to do things in this kind of virtual environment has definitely reduced barriers to seeking care.
That's amazing. So increasing access, and it's so important, right? The moms may not have the ability to drive into the center.
Right.
2 or 3 hours. But if they can do this at the comfort of their own home, it creates that, oh, I'm in my own home now, I can be flexible. And the therapist as well can see, okay, if I'm going to prescribe certain modality for that patient, I know their environment, right? Like in the Zoom wall, they can see what's going on in the background, right? How they interact with their family. They can get to meet the moms, the grandmothers, the grandparents, right? Of those kids. So they at least can customize, really a customizable plan and treatment plan for those patients, as opposed to the patient coming in and may not be as open during those in-person visits. They'll paint a story, but now the therapist actually sees the story in the comfort of their own. I know that is extremely vulnerable for the mom, but it opens a better way to customize a treatment plan for that mom, which is incredible. Yeah. One last thing, I know we're wrapping up here. What does, outside of the work that you do, what brings you joy outside of, say, this work as a CEO? What brings you joy?
I love that question, you know, because it's, you know, the work is certainly very hard and yet rewarding. And similarly, you know, the work of being a mother, and that's what brings me such joy, because that is also extremely hard and challenging, but so rewarding. And I'm an older mom, so I, you know, came to motherhood came to me in an unexpected way through adoption. And I, our son is 8 now. And just seeing the ideas formulated in his head, the conversations, how they've evolved, and just being able to have those wonderful exchanges each day after a hard day brings me great joy. It's such a privilege to be able to lead the Center for Black Women's Wellness, and it's an even greater privilege to be his mom.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. So you guys, how can people find you?
Yes, so everyone can find us on our website, which is soon to be modified, but still it's going to be the same landing page, cbww.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram, CBWW Atlanta, our social media feeds. But we would be thrilled for you all to connect with us and just, you know, again, I thank you so much, Mal. This has been great, and I love what you're doing. And anything we can do collectively to lift up the voices of women and birthing people and make sure that childbirth is safer and more respectful, I'm all for it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for agreeing to be on. Looking forward to more of this dialogues.
Thank you.